Patrick and Cyprian take a retrospective look at entangled things. The team discuss the journey so far, the excitement and challenges of podcasting, and the joy of gaining and sharing knowledge of guests from within the industry. Welcome to Entangled Things, your quantum computing podcast, hosted by Patrick and Cyprian.
Hey, Cyprian, how you doing?
Hi, Patrick. I'm doing well, and I'm really looking forward to this very special episode of Entangled Things.
I don't know if these are the best guests we've ever had or the worst. Probably the worst. It's you and I alone. No guests. So today, we're going to talk about what a long, strange journey it's been. We're more than a year in. Every other week is a pretty good cadence, especially for such a heavy topic. But we wanted to kind of do a retrospective with the journey so far and talk about, you know, what we've seen, what we've learned, which has been quite a lot. So I know I started this journey really eyes wide open, fresh out of taking some of the MIT courses, really consuming as much information as I could about this topic, because you introduced me to it. And I either should curse you or thank you for that. I'm not sure. So I guess it's different by the hour. But it's such an intriguing area. And there's stuff to talk about every day. It's growing. You always warn about the hype and not letting the hype overtake the truth and what's going on. And so there's been some things that make me even more excited about it, and some things that have tamped down the rhetoric a little bit. So what's your favorite thing or most surprising thing that we've discovered through our guests since we started talking to guests on the podcast?
Well, I think the most surprising thing, honestly, is how easy it is to attract top level guests in the field. Right. I mean, if we're looking at just the list of who we had in the show.
It's a who's who.
Right. It's amazing. I'm still amazed by the caliber of folks that we had on our show, because I distinctly remember how this all started. Right. We were geeking out about quantum computing whenever we were meeting. Just to remind our audience, I'm living in Eastern Europe. Patrick is living in the United States. So like a couple of times a year, maybe we would meet, and then we would take the opportunity of having these very long discussions. And at some point, these discussions were really heated, right? Because we were addressing all sorts of things. And at some point when we looked around, we realized we had an audience, right?
A crowd.
A crowd, right? And that was like the point of, okay, maybe we should start doing something like a podcast. And in the beginning, to be very honest, right, I was expecting, let's say, a fairly rough start. And then I was expecting to be fairly difficult. But then we had like the first guest, and then the second, the third. And all of the sudden, we realized that we are having on the show some of the most amazing people in the field. So
yeah.
To be honest with you, Patrick, it's not something about quantum computing that really kind of surprised me in this journey, but it's really the knowledge that we can get ourselves and also share with our listeners coming from these amazing people that we have on the show.
Well, so there's a huge appetite for understanding this area. So I think there's three areas of technology that are just plain magic to those who aren't in them. One is cyber, and I experience that in my daily life. The other is artificial intelligence, which is your ballywick and your world. And the third, and probably the most mystical, is quantum. And so one of the things that struck me about, and we were always doing these discussions at big technical conferences, and often in the speakers area or near, you know, where a lot of speakers, a lot of smart people, Clemens Vasters, people like Scott Hanselman walking around, lots of very smart people. And what we would mostly get from the people who had gathered, our accumulated cloud, were questions, not opinions, not like, I think it's this. It was, well, how does that work? And how? So I think that was our early podcast. So we didn't capture any of them. But as we were exploring it, we're bringing everybody along. And that's been the goal, is to help spread this word. And I mean, getting the government of Finland to come and talk about their new release of a 5-qubit system, the scientists from D-Wave and IBM and Quantinium, and you know, just so many. I do disservice to not mention all of them, but I just can't. There's too many now. And you know, we have lots more guests planned, some repeats, as well as others that we're gunning for. And there's still been elusive guests, people who we can't nail down yet. So we still have some work to do, but we're also trying not to be too intrusive. At this point, we should also very much give credit to our background staff who help follow up and who do the recordings and do the editing and make us sound competent in these editings. But I'm sure they're cutting a lot of me out. But what I think is some of the most striking revelations for me is that there's so much more potential left that we don't even consider. But there's also some things that I thought were going to be faster or bigger that are definitely going to be slower and maybe smaller. So we had a discussion recently with Nossen, excellent professor out of New York, where we talked about maybe there just aren't that many striking big algorithms out there waiting to be discovered like Shor's and Grover's. And that was a big reframe for me. It kind of changed my perspective. And so what I'm hoping is a lot of our listeners will encounter these reframe perspectives so that they can look at things from a different angle and get new insights and get new understanding. Another interesting thing that just happened is I was just reading an article about forever chemicals. They're very big in the news. These chemicals that once plastics break down, they're incredibly stable and they literally won't break down for ages and ages, if ever. And they figured out how to break down a class of them. And they used a quantum mechanical model, which I think means they leveraged some quantum computing to do some of this. And I wouldn't be surprised if a D-Wave system or one of the other Quantinium or other systems was employed to do this stuff. So they're starting to nibble into the real consciousness, the real world. This topic is starting to become real.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's amazing, right? And as you said, some areas, if we look back since we started the show, some areas are moving much faster than we imagined. Some areas are moving much slower than we imagined. So that's very interesting. And we kind of set, I think we've set the expectations right in the beginning. And maybe that's also one of the reasons why we are enjoying a fair amount of success. I think we were quite honest, right? And we were, let's say, quite open in setting expectations with respect to how we're going to talk about quantum, how we're going to, as you mentioned, try to leave as much hype out as possible,
yeah.
Right? And at the end of the day, right, just be honest with our audience. And by the way, one of the other thing that strikes me is, remember we were discussing in the beginning and we were explaining the concept of this podcast to friends and, yeah, and coworkers, and we were like, we want to talk about one of the most probably complex and difficult areas of computer science, right? Without video signal, without slides, right? Without diagrams, like essentially by voice only. And I distinctly remember we've had several folks saying like that's not gonna fly, right?
No.
So like more than a year into this, I'm still amazed that because we have the listeners, right? It seems that you actually can just talk about quantum computing and still produce something interesting. So that's kind of another big lesson
big takeaway.
And takeaway from my side.
If you throw enough words at it, you can paint a picture, I guess. Well, we've had great guests. We have to give a lot of credit to the fact that we've had fantastic guests. A lot of times, you know, we just set them up and introduce them and they run. We try to talk just enough to have it be a conversation. We've gotten great feedback from the guests that they enjoy the conversation and the time flies by very quickly. It does for us. So we're hoping that while we learn more from our guests get back from us what the slightly informed crowd gets and doesn't get about their area. And I think that's a good give and take for them. They get to talk to a couple people who are definitely seasoned amateurs, is the way I would describe myself. And so, you know, they don't have to explain what superposition means, even though I could use a primer on it probably. They don't have to dive into the basics, but they can talk about it. And then what we need clarified will help them, you know, talking to their students or their board or their customers, et cetera. So I think there's been a give and take for them, but there's also an immense learning opportunity for us. I feel much more comfortable with the topic space that I did when we started. And it's funny, the more I learn, the more I know I don't know, you know, so it's one of those elusive things. So, but we're firmly in the infancy now. The quantum computing is solving problems in the business world, in great thanks to D-Wave and their approach to take, and I don't mean to say this in a way that diminishes it, an easier route to quantum computing, but a more perilous business route down the line. But they've jumped ahead by doing quantum annealing, but that's where a lot of the work is actually happening, where people can take a business problem and go solve it with a Qubo. Whereas others are coming, following on, and we're starting to hear from people who are solving, you know, 3,800 variable parameter equations relative to self-driving cars. And so there's lots of players. And I'm still uncertain about a core question, which is, will it all coalesce at some point into a single modality, or will there always be a place for superconductors and photonics and trapped ion? I still don't know the answer. I mean, predictions are always dangerous, but computing itself moved away from vacuum tubes, and we've solidified. There's different architectures, but there's not different, really differences in the way silicon is made and the way chips are made in classical computing. But do you have any insights? Do you think there's going to be a reason for there to be photonics and trapped ion and superconducting in the future? I can't rule it out.
Definitely not, right? I mean, from a certain point of view, though, I feel like the situation is different, Patrick, with quantum computing than with classical, because while we did evolve, right, from tubes, and then we went to the transistor and so forth, right? We, at any given point in time, we always had at most two options, right? There was the current existing option plus the new,
upcoming.
Right, the upcoming revolution, like whether it was the tubes or the transistor. So it was always something like what we have right now and then the next big thing.
New and improved.
Yeah, right. While here, we are kind of working on multiple threads, so to speak, right? And it's at this point, I would 100% agree with you. It is extremely difficult to make any kind of prediction with respect to which of these modalities will prevail, which will stand the test of time, and also whether some new modalities or some special ones, like, for instance, the one that Microsoft is pursuing, right, will not kind of come strong from behind and kind of surpass all of them. So it's very difficult to say at this point, but it's encouraging, from my point of view, it's encouraging to see progress in virtually every single area, right?
Which is why I think, well, if you look at building materials, if you were to go back to any time in human history, you might say, well, this is an age when we built with mud or wood or stone or steel. And we build with all of them still today. We, you know, there are wooden houses and stone houses and steel buildings. And so I think there's room for a vision of a future where there are multiple modalities based on what you're trying to solve. And maybe for the rest of our lifetimes, there's still a place for universal quantum computing as well as quantum annealing to have their own spaces. Because the big advantage of annealing right now is much higher numbers of qubits are achievable. And so they're solving, you know, optimization problems like it's going out of style and just getting to bigger and bigger optimization problems.
And I also think, Patrick, that the big advantage of annealing, right, is that it does have a very strong use case, right? A very kind of real life-based use case, which is optimization problems. It's, you don't need to struggle too much to, let's say, find the proper way to use, let's say, a D-Wave processor, right? It's yeah. It's pretty straightforward.
There's a large class of problems that it's well suited
very
for.
Very practical problems that need to be solved and that need better, more, let's say, faster solvers and so forth. So that's one big advantage. I distinctly remember discussing with several of our guests about how it's not really that easy to find the proper problems to be solved by universal quantum computing, right? We have the usual kids on the block, the usual suspects, factorization and search, Grover, and so forth, but we haven't really seen like a ton of brand new applications. So that's an area where there's still a lot of struggle when it comes to universal quantum computing.
I've tried to put together a blueprint for how you would discover, how would you discover the Cyprian procedure or algorithm or, you know, how would you do the next big thing? Well, first you'd have to find a problem, a real, you know, problem that people want to solve, need to solve, a useful problem to solve that a classical computer can't reasonably solve. That's the first thing. So, you know, encryption is based on that fact. So that makes sense. And search is another big one. So it's hard to find these problems that aren't very esoteric. When you start looking further, it's kind of like, well, that's easy for a classical computer to do. So it's disqualified. That one is so esoteric and so like in the clouds, I don't see an practical application. So first you have to discover that. And then you can apply quantum to it. And I think that's the hard part now. I don't think the hard part is, well, I mean, I'm sure it's very hard to figure out the algorithm that would solve that problem. But that's the reason we're not, that's the reason that the algorithms in the algorithm zoo are mostly unknown to the masses, whereas Shor's and Grover's are not. Now, you and I have been talking about Shor's and Grover's for a long time, but they're the two most significant ones. They're the ones that have put universal quantum computing on the map. And maybe that's enough, but I got to imagine there's other problems we're overlooking that are either no one's thinking about, or we just haven't realized they're here.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And it's all part of the magic of quantum computing, right? It's one thing that really fascinates me is how difficult this thing is on every single conceivable level, right?
Yeah.
It's super difficult to build the computers. It's super difficult to imagine the algorithms. It's quite difficult to, let's say, embed or remodel your problems. Yet the opportunities that appear to exist kind of warrant this huge effort that's being put into all these areas, whether it's building the physical machines or building the stacks, the ecosystems, the programming languages, right, the algorithms. It's fascinating to me how it's not even commercially fully available, and we already have some very specific disciplines here, right? And we're not even touching on quantum communications, right? Just to be clear, which is a whole different ballgame, with its own kind of difficulties and challenges and so forth. It's absolutely fascinating for me.
I wonder, you know how we always, we don't always, but there's several ways to measure the advancement of a society. We talk about, you know, what kind of energy they use. Do they use the energy of a planet? Do they use the energy of a sun? Do they energy of a galaxy? Have they captured the power of the atom? And honestly, I think the power of the atom is on the right track, but a little misleading. I think if there are other civilizations in the universe, intelligent civilizations, the way 1,000, 10,000, a million years from now, we would think about measuring them is in how they manipulate at the atomic level for usefulness, not just for energy, not just for destruction, but for information. In fact, I wouldn't be surprised if the right way to measure a society is whether they've achieved and where they've taken their quantum computing.
This reminds me of a very, very interesting article that I've read at some point, which was discussing the perceived failure of the very popular SETI program, right? SETI stands.
Where is everyone?
For search for extraterrestrial in intelligence, right? And what's really interesting there is that there has been a lot of effort put into it. There has been like a lot of lots and lots of initiatives, and yet, except for maybe half a dozen, let's say false alarms, right? It really seems that we haven't achieved anything. So there was person, this guy called Michael Hipke, who published in 2021 a paper called Searching for Interstellar Quantum Communications. And he kind of raises this interesting question, right? Is that, well, we have found out that we can't interact with extraterrestrial life, but what we really did so far was to search like in narrow band signals in the
radio, waves.
In the radio spectrum and for some optical laser pulses, right? But that's all we've done.
It's like looking for smoke signals in the 21st century.
Exactly, right? Like, what if a really advanced civilization is actually using quantum-based communications, right, which we are not even aware of? So as you mentioned, it's pretty much like I would try to identify your city from my city looking for, as you said, signs of smoke, right? I will never see intentional, right, signs of smoke raising from your city, Patrick. Hence, I will infer from that I'm alone on the planet, right? Which is not the case.
Or just that there's no intelligent life here, which is often held in Europe as an opinion. the Drake equation is I've always found is quite interesting because it talks about the period of time from which a civilization emerges to start using radio wave communication, which is certainly a level of advancement. And then, but they didn't consider in the beginning how long they considered, well, how long before they're destroyed, assuming they would emit radio waves forever. But there might be a point where radio waves are so passe, they're just not emitted anymore because quantum communications that we can't perceive, we can't conceive of yet. Maybe there is, I know, I hold out hope, as do many of our listeners, that you and the physics world is wrong and we can't have faster than light communication through through quantum entanglement. I still hold out hope, but maybe, you know, maybe there is a way to cheat that corner and have quantum entanglement be your communication. And then there's nothing to transmit.
Yeah.
You know?
Anyway, but these things that we are discussing right now are also triggering in my mind another thought. And I think looking back to all our episodes, I think we managed to kind of strike the right balance between the different topics related to quantum computing. I think we've managed to avoid the trap of being exclusively focused on how to build the computers, yeah, or how to program them or how to do this and that. And I think so far, and I definitely know we are actively kind of striving for that, we managed to have a balanced menu, so to speak, for our audience.
Well, it helps that neither of us are really have a profit motivation here. Neither one of us is drawing our daily income from it. So I think that's helped immensely.
Oh yeah, definitely.
No extra grind.
You've got so much freedom, right? When the only driver is your passion for the field,
yeah,
which we know drives both of us. And that's one of the, let's say, small luxuries of life that we have with this show. And I think we've managed also to strike a good balance between kind of covering academia and government and private companies.
Business,
I think we're kind of having a little bit of each in the show.
Well,
that's
actually,
also, I believe, a good thing.
Interesting. I mean, have we talked to many academics that aren't involved in some business venture? I mean, the academic world is spitting out these companies and merging and doing all these things. Almost everyone we talk to is some kind of academic, you know, high achiever who also is a senior advisor or an inventor or a founder of some, you know, startup that's going to try to revolutionize the world. So it's a virtuous cycle, in my opinion. That's also been an interesting takeaway, is how many of the CEOs are academics.
Well, I think in this particular field, the very nature of the, let's say, very heavy scientific kind of load and background kind of justifies that.
Absolutely.
It's very difficult to, let's say, make a dent in the world of quantum computing unless you have some very, very serious scientific academic background in various fields, right? Ranging from like fundamental physics all the way to material science or you name it. So I think it's, at least at this stage, this is, let's say, pretty normal. But this brings us to another topic, right, which is very close and dear to our hearts, which is the democratization of quantum computing, right? Getting out of that stage where you need a physics PhD or any kind of a math PhD, right, to be able to work with this stuff, and getting to the point where virtually anyone with an interest can actually start poking around and testing and doing things. And I believe some of the large organizations, right, like IBM, like Microsoft, like OneQubit, are having some serious contributions towards this direction.
I think that the Microsoft to D-Wave platform path is going to be critical to that, because I think just like in the beginning of the computer world, we had shadow IT where people were building access databases because they couldn't get mainframe time. We're going to see people in industry, you know, resorting to Kubo development through, you know, D-Wave or maybe through Microsoft's Q Sharp in order to solve problems that they can't get IT to solve. And that's going to be the virtuous cycle. That's going to be the on-ramp for those who choose not to delve into the physics, or who can manage to just suspend disbelief. I find that I can transfer these concepts very quickly to people and get them a working understanding of how it all works if they don't have to delve into the, well, why does it work? Why does superposition work that way? Why does entanglement? I fully support the why, and I think people should pursue the why, but I think it gets in the way of the way that most people try to teach it. I think you should tell them how it works, get them to accept it, and if they need to understand the why, then you spend the hours long lectures on superposition, entanglement, and you know Bell's theorem and all the other things that prove it. Because I'm convinced now. I was the kind of person where when you told me this stuff, I believed it, but I wanted to understand the why. And of course, the why is elusive in that if you think you understand why, you don't understand. And so, but you have to come to that eventually with some things. I've actually done some lectures with some of our staff, and I've broken certain people for a week at a time where they just were not useful, couldn't do any useful work. They were just watching videos on YouTube, and it was great, but it was also a lesson that you got to be careful. You know, it's kind of like when you tell the robot, you know, that you're lying, that you are a liar and you only tell lies, and then the robot self-destructs. I think that was a Star Trek episode. So I think we need to come to this turning point. I think we're close to it where there are people who can understand how it works to make it work themselves without understanding why it works. You know, I don't really know how a fuel injector works in the nitty gritty, but I accept that it works. So when I step on the gas pedal, the car goes. If you change it to an electric car, it doesn't matter that it's no longer spraying gas into a cylinder. It still goes. The paradigm still works for me. And I think we're approaching that level through the efforts of these aggregating technologies, these technologies that are trying to mask the differences underneath to allow me to deal with different modalities in the same way. And I think that's the key, I think, this year and next and maybe the year after. And then, I mean, IBM's talking about 1,000 qubit chip next year. That's isn't that faster than you expected?
Well, from a certain point, it is, right? But we will, on the other hand, we will need to understand, like, what is the fine print that comes with the 1,000 qubit chip?
not to be used in conjunction with each other.
Because, you know, there are always some limitations, there are some caveats, and so forth. And this is where, obviously, the marketing engines of the world are trying to convince us of some stellar, no pun intended, results, right? and we will have to see, right? Nevertheless, it's the very fact, the simple fact that they set such a goal is impressive enough to me, right? It's even if there will be some fine print, there will be caveats, there will be limitations. It's still moving. Is it faster than I thought? Probably yes. Is it faster than I hoped? Definitely not.
No. Okay. Well.
Right? So I really like. I distinctly remember, Patrick, that when we were having our first discussions, I think they started maybe 3-4 years ago, something like that.
I think longer than that, actually. But yeah,
at that, like the very long ones, I'm referring to. Yeah. At that point, it wasn't yet very, very clear that quantum computing is going to be a thing, right? Because there were so many unknowns and so many hurdles and so forth.
It looked promising.
Yeah. I think we are starting now to move out of promising and get a little bit of certainty, right? Not much. I don't want our audience to get over enthusiastic, right? But I think it becomes increasingly clear that quantum computing is actually on the path of being a real thing. And then the other very important aspect that we've probably learned and also covered through many episodes is we're heading towards a hybrid world, right? Quantum is not going to replace classical. In fact, most solutions to some of humanity's big problems are going to be hybrid solutions, where
of course
you have a classical computing part and then you delegate some subset of the problem to quantum, and then you go back to classical, and then you delegate another subset to quantum, and so forth. And that's very, very interesting to me, because again, getting back to hype, I've heard way too many people saying, "Oh, quantum computing is going to revolutionize everything. It's going to replace everything." And
yeah, they're misunderstanding. It's not going to replace. It's going to supplement.
I think that's another. We can already put that under, let's say, the category of certainties. We are heading towards a hybrid world. You're not going to run your quantum computer under your desk or not even your basement.
No, it'll be a cloud service that's leveraged behind the scenes that you won't even notice. And you know, the people who will use it most directly are the chemistry and material science people, I think.
Yeah, definitely. So,
well, as
so, very interesting kind of world we're heading to.
Oh my God, yeah. So that's the understatement of the episode for sure. Time flies when you're having fun. We're starting to get to the point. Anything else you want to point out from this long journey or short journey that seems like it's covered so much ground so quickly?
I just want to say two things. One is, very candidly and openly, I'm so happy that we decided to do this thing.
Agreed.
Right. Remember, we said, okay, let's try. Let's see what happens.
Maybe we'll get five listeners.
and we'll see where it goes. Right.
Yeah.
I certainly feel privileged to be able to talk with such extraordinary people. Right. And be able to myself learn a lot of stuff. And then the second thing is obviously probably a big, big thank you to our audience,
yep.
Right?
100%.
We've got literally thousands of folks listening to us, which seems to be quite a performance for a quantum computing podcast, right? So I think it's a good moment to say a big, big thank you to all our listeners, present and future ones. It feels good to see that what we're doing actually has an impact.
Yep.
And then obviously, last but not least, because this is kind of like a, let's say, more or less an anniversary show, I'll just have to say, Patrick, it's an absolute privilege to do this thing together with you. We've known each other for so many years through various programs and conferences and things like that. But to be honest, I didn't expect the two of us to be able to, let's say, complement each other the way we do in the shows. And leaving modesty aside, I think the both of us also have a small contribution to the success of this show. But anyway, it's an absolute pleasure, Patrick, to be together with you in this. And I really hope we'll carry on this show for quite some time from now on.
Oh, we will. We will. They'll be dragging us out of the studio to the old folks' home. I couldn't have said it better. I couldn't have said it better, Cyprian. You took the words. So I need to thank you for bringing me into this and curse you for bringing me into this. And I'm sure we're getting the same kind of emotion from our listeners. Like, I'm so happy they brought me into this world. I'm so mad they brought me into this world. It's pretty cool. It's pretty spectacular. So with that, I think we'll call it a day, and we'll be joined again with my guest in our future episodes, and occasionally it'll just be the two of us, and that's always fun too.
Absolutely.
Thanks, everybody. We'll talk to you later. Bye.
Thank you. Bye.
Thank you.